Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Werewolves Like Pink 2 by D.N. Hoxha, narrated by Isabel Turner and Brandon Utah. Chapter 1. Teddy DeVere. "I got this," I told the wall in front of me. "I so got this." My hands shook a little and my palms were a bit sweaty, but I had this. This wasn't nervousness. It was excitement. Squeezing my eyes shut, I touched my forehead to said wall. It was cool against my skin, and it distracted me for a second. Before I remembered where I was again, and my empty stomach threatened to come right out of my mouth. But I'd prepared for this. I'd seen it coming, hence why I hadn't eaten breakfast at all. Prepared. And, yeah, I was panicking. But it wasn't going to last forever. Possibly about 2 weeks, and then I'd be just fine. Taking in a deep breath, I turned around and pressed my back to the cold wall, my palms against it. The button of my jacket was still in my hand, a tiny thing painted gold that had fallen off just minutes ago. Not sure if that was the reason why I'd run and locked myself in here, but I could sew it back on. As soon as I got home, I would make it look brand new again. I was a pixie. I could sew a button in my sleep. No need to freak out. The room where I hid was dark. No windows anywhere, and barely any light slipped from under the door. So I was hiding in the janitor's closet. So what? It was my first day at Orion's Department of Protection, and I was entitled to running and hiding at least a couple more times this week. That wasn't going to change the fact that I was here. I'd made it. I, Teddy DeVere, was in New York City, over 8,000 miles away from home, all by myself. Probably not the first pixie to live in a big city, but definitely one of the very few. "I made it," I said to myself, and started pacing in the small space in front of the door. I talked to myself a lot, but I wasn't crazy or anything. That's just how I gave power to my thoughts. That's how I convinced myself that I was not going to drop dead any second now. "I made it. I'm here," I mumbled, and the movement of my legs felt mighty fine against the panic. "I'm going to be okay. I've got the D's, I've got everything I need. I made it." Another couple of minutes of saying those words to myself, and I'd be ready to return to my desk. But...
"You might dig a hole in the floor if you keep pacing like that."
I froze. The voice of a man came from somewhere deeper in the rectangular room. I looked at the darkness, tried to see a head or a body or anything moving, but there was nothing there. Light. I needed light. Moving back to the door, I searched the wall to its side until my fingers found the switch. I flipped it up, and the white overhead lights almost blinded me. But a couple of blinks later, I could see. The man sat on the floor at the end of the room, back against metal shelves full of detergent bottles, mops, buckets, and toilet paper. His elbows rested on his knees as he watched me, completely calm. A loud sigh escaped my lips. Not a three-headed monster about to tear me to pieces and eat me raw. Just a man sitting in the dark by himself. "I'm sorry," I said, breathing a little easier, then looked at the white tiles of the floor. "Is that really possible? Is this a special floor, like magical or something? Does it actually get spent?" I'd heard a lot of tales about this place back home, but for the life of me, I couldn't find anything on those tiles that said they were about to fall apart. The man stayed perfectly silent. He stared at me, eyes wide and lips slightly parted. He looked positively shocked.
I stepped a little closer and squinted my eyes at him.
"Why aren't you talking?" I whispered.
He'd talked before, hadn't he? I didn't imagine his words. He'd said them. I was 99% sure of it. The man blinked once, then pulled his lips inside his mouth.
"It's just an expression," he finally said,
and it was almost like it pained him to say those words. An expression. "Oh," I said, slamming my hand on my forehead. Of course it's an expression. I couldn't dig a hole in the floor if I tried. I barely weighed 105 pounds, which was a lot for my kind, actually, but still not enough to even chip those tiles with my steps. I'm gonna have to learn all about those, too. Expressions were important. If I was going to fit in, I needed to know everything.
"You will," the guy said. "The most important things are the D's, and you apparently got those."
I laughed. "I sure do. Determination, dedication, discipline," I counted on my fingers. That's what the pamphlet said I needed, and I had all of it. I had what it took to be here. So what if I was the first of my clan to actually leave home and work for the ODP? No pressure.
"You look nervous," the guy said again.
No, just excited. I'm excited, not nervous." I read somewhere that the body reacted the same way to both emotions, so all we had to do was trick ourselves into thinking that we're excited when we're nervous, and voila. Except I was already exhausted, and a teeny tiny bit suspicious that was, in fact, bullshit. Resting my hand on the wall for some support, I sighed. Nervousness, excitement, it was all the same, wasn't it? It sucked out your energy completely. "Sorry," I mumbled to the guy who kept analyzing me. I must have looked like a fool to him, so I straightened up again and cleared my throat. "I'm Teddy, by the way. I'm new."
"You don't say."
My lips opened and closed a couple times. I just said, actually. His thick brows shot up, and heat crawled up my neck to settle on my cheeks. "An expression. Right," I said with a nod, feeling smaller by the second. I pressed my back on the wall and slid down to the floor, too. If he could sit there, I could sit there, too. My legs were shaking anyway.
"Why, Teddy?"
he asked, and his voice didn't change. It was all low and rough, and while mine rose and lowered a couple times within the same sentence, his was composed. "It's short for Theodora. My mom said I looked like a teddy bear when I was a baby. The tip of my nose turned pink when I cried. It still did, actually. I guess it just stuck." The guy nodded like that made perfect sense to him. He turned his eyes to the closed door and rested his head on the shelf behind him. Like that, the light illuminated all of his face, and I saw every detail on him. His hair was so black, it shone blue at the tips. He kept it on the longer side, some strings touching the nape of his neck. His short beard was the same color, like a shadow covering his cheeks and chin, and his lips. They were a dark red, like he'd spent the past hour biting on them. That could have very well been the case because they looked swollen, perfectly outlined with a knife-sharp Cupid's bow. His eyes were the same way, two up-tilted slits, swollen halfway shut, like he'd just woken up seconds ago. I couldn't see the color in them, but they looked dark. My God, he was beautiful. My eyes scrolled down his body next, since he was still looking at the door. He was massive, wide shoulders and long legs, big clean hands and large feet. The more of him I noticed, the more it felt like someone had lit a fire in the pit of my stomach, because the heat in there almost burned me. I swallowed hard and looked away too, trying to remind myself that it was normal to be, surprised by the looks of this man. My whole 21 years of life, I'd only lived in my clan, surrounded by my kind. Pixies, like most fae, were different from humans appearance-wise. We were on the smaller side. I was considered very tall back home, and I stood just over 5 feet. Most of them had hair and eyes in a shade of purple. Not me, though. I was pink. My hair was pink. My eyes were pink. Even my skin had that pink undertone to it. And if I so much as blushed a little bit, it turned bright pink everywhere. Needless to say, I hated pink with a passion. Ironically, the color suited me best, even better than black. After a few more seconds, I straightened my back, feeling a bit more confident to look at the guy again. "So, you work here too?" I blurted, and my eyes squeezed shut the next second. What a stupid question. Of course he worked here. Why else would he even be in this building? "Why are you sitting here in the dark, sulking?" I asked next, before he could answer with the obvious. He turned his eyes to me, never moving his head.
"I am not sulking."
"Yes, you are." He was most definitely sulking. What would a guy who looked like that be sulking about? And that's not a very good idea. You need to focus on the positive to attract the positive. His lips parted again, and his eyes glistened. What was going on in that head of his? Why wouldn't he just talk more? I cleared my throat. "So, how about a smile then?" His lips pressed together again, and yes, I noticed how perfectly aware of them I was. But it would be rude to turn away from him now, wouldn't it? "No smile?" His answer was to squint his eyes at me. "I bet I can get one out of you." Not for me, mind you, but because he really looked like he needed a smile. Did he ever stretch those lips? Faces were made to smile, my dad said, and this guy didn't look like he did it often. Dragging myself a bit closer to the shelf, I said, "It's not hard, I promise. You just need to think about something positive." His brow shot up.
"Like what?"
I don't know. Heat gathered in my cheeks again. He had a million positive things he could pick, like his eyes or his tan skin or his mouth or his hands. "How about your shoes? They're black."
"Black,"
he repeated. "Yes, black is good, right?" Oh, no, black was not good. Black sucked the color out of, well, colors. It didn't represent anything positive. The guy closed his eyes for a moment, like he was trying to compose himself. He didn't say anything. "You're not a man of many words, but that's okay," I continued. At this point, it was impossible to even try to tell myself what I was feeling was excitement. I was plain nervous, and a bit mortified. Still, I kept on going because when had I ever known to keep my mouth shut? "I have this thing where I sense vibes. I'm going to figure you out, mister." I smiled, but he didn't return it. "What's your name? Better yet, what's your sign?" "It could be..." I raised up my hand. "Wait, don't tell me. It's Aquarius, isn't it?" I waited a heartbeat, then two. Not a single sound. "You're not giving me much to work with here," I mumbled, and leaned back against the wall. The truth of this whole thing fell on me like a brick wall.
I had no idea what I was doing. I'd come so far away from home, thinking I had what it took to make my place here, and the first guy I talked to wouldn't even hold a conversation with me. But no, that wasn't right. I couldn't let myself think like that. This was my first day, for God's sake. It wasn't over until I won. Man, I'd really overdone it with archiving those quotes on Instagram these past few months, and I was starting to annoy my own self with them. I sat up straight again and looked at the guy. "I'll trade you then." He sighed, shaking his head.
"You're not going to stop, are you?"
It wasn't even a question. "Nope. Not until I win. But I'll trade you for that smile. How about it? It's something..." What was I even going to give him? "Something small and golden and really, really... just... you won't be able to resist it." I held onto the button in my hand tightly.
"Oh?"
he said, finally a bit curious. I grinned. "Catch!" I threw the button in the air, and he moved so fast it was kind of surprising. He caught it in his massive fist and brought it down again, shoulders rigid, brows narrowed in caution. He opened his fingers slowly and looked inside. His shoulders relaxed instantly.
"A button."
"A button," I said with a nod. And then, the most wonderful thing happened. He tried, oh, how he tried to keep his face neutral. It looked a bit painful, too, but his lips stretched and stretched, and the corners turned upward, and his white teeth peeked out just a tiny bit. A smile. "Aha!" I shouted, pointing my finger at his face that was now already smileless again. "I saw that! I saw it!" I'd won. He closed his fist around the button and shook his head, eyes shut tightly. I fell back against the wall again, feeling a million times better for that win. It was small, but it was mine. And it proved that I could, in fact, do this. If I could force a smile out of a guy like that, I could take on the ODP in my sleep. But the feeling didn't last. Suddenly, the man moved. He leaned forward and he looked at me, and I expected his name or a thank you or anything other than,
"You shouldn't be here, teddy bear."
Unfortunately, that's what I got. "Oh." I tried my best to keep up my smile, but it melted off my face within seconds. And the guy stood up. My God, he was huge. Probably over 6 feet tall, and he could fit three me's between those shoulders. What was he? A high fae? No, those felt different. A low fae, then? Like a nymph? But that didn't feel right either. Maybe a gifted? A vampire, or a werewolf, or a...
"Watch your back. It's a jungle out there," he said, cutting off my thoughts, and made for the door.
He opened it, and the sound of the hallway hit us, reminding me that we hadn't been all alone in the world like it had felt until now.
"And teddy bear?"
I looked up into his eyes, and they were wide enough now that I saw the color in them. Green, like the never-ending fields of grass at home, and those beautiful plants I could never manage to grow.
"Always assume the worst."
Only when he walked out and closed the door behind him did it occur to me that he'd never even told me his name. Chapter 2. 2 years later. Dominic Dane. The name made my flesh rise in goosebumps every time I heard it whispered among my colleagues. He came into the office with his chin up, those massive shoulders wide. He strode between the desks and to the other side like we lowly creatures were too unimportant for his attention.
By the time he made it to the door to his office, which he had all to himself with windows and blinds and a whole desk he usually used to rest his feet on, someone would have brought him a cup of warm coffee. He never even acknowledged any of the poor souls who actually fought among one another to be the one to bring him coffee each morning. No sugar, no cream, just black. Like his clothes. Like his soul. He just took the steaming cup, walked in his office, and slammed the door shut loud enough for the entire building to hear. 100% werewolf. 101% asshole. Hence the reason why I called him Wolf Ass in my head. Then he put the coffee cup on his wide desk, took off the leather jacket he always wore no matter the weather outside, and proceeded to turn the blinds so that he could shut us all out for the rest of the day. Not that I was watching like everyone else in the office. I wasn't. I hadn't in a long time now, but I'd seen it happen so many times before that I knew every single one of his movements by memory. And they never changed. I refused to give him even a glimpse. Instead, I opened my journal to make a small red plus on the calendar under 9 a.m., just like I did every morning. That small plus meant that I hadn't budged, hadn't even darted my eyes his way for a single second until I heard the door of his office close. My first win for the day. I was already feeling better. "Psst," came a voice from ahead. "Did you hear? Mary from the second had sex with Double D last night." The muscles of my stomach clenched, and I looked up at Patricia, her head lowered almost to the surface of her desk as she whispered. The others, Hunter, who sat on her left, and Eva, who sat on my right, awed and oohed at the news, like it was the most important piece of information they'd ever received.
"No way,"
Hunter said, lowering his head to the desk too.
"I don't believe it."
"Why not? Even though he acts like one of these marble pillars, he's still a man underneath all that sneering," Eva said, fanning herself.
"I just saw him come in. Trust me, he does not look like a man who got laid last night," said Hunter.
"He always looks like that." Patricia rolled her brown eyes extra slowly, like she always did. "That doesn't mean anything. Mary told Jenna just this morning on the way to work, and Jenna told Arthur, and Arthur told Cecile. We all know Cecile's got the best info dishes to serve." "Yeah, there wasn't much that went on around here without Cecile knowing about it. She was one of the maintenance staff at the ODP headquarters who worked 12-hour shifts willingly. But that's brownies for you."
"I'm stamping it with a maybe," Hunter said, raising his hands as if he was already exhausted.
"Definitely a yes. Last year, he fucked Jennifer, too. You guys remember Jennifer, right?" Eva asked.
"Oh, yeah. She was hot,"
Hunter said, wiggling his brows.
"The point is, he does have sex.
Werewolves are men, too," Patricia said, then flinched.
"Technically speaking."
"Why are you so quiet?" said Eva, turning her squinted eyes at me.
"Yeah, Teddy, why are you so quiet?"
Hunter asked, folding his arms in front of him.
"Believe it or not, I have much more important things to think about than whom Dominic Dane beds," I said, a bit more bitterly than I'd have liked.
They all watched me for a beat.
"Like what?"
Patricia asked, completely serious.
"My job?"
I said, rolling my eyes, though not as slowly as she did.
"That's what we're all here for, aren't we?"
"But we hardly ever hear rumors about him,"
Hunter whispered, like he really didn't understand what I meant.
"Are you serious? You talk about him every single day."
I should know. My ears kept suffering because of it.
"We all knew about his incredibly bad manners, his gigantic ego, and his unmatched track record.
We all heard about his heroics, how he killed a berserker once all by himself and trapped within hours a family of Kelpies in Jersey who were eating human children, and how he saved the inhabitants of an entire neighborhood in Queens who were being held against their will by a pack of boggarts. The problem was, they all believed the rumors. I worked in a wide area with 52 Carols spread out in 8 perfect rows, with 51 other agents ranging from 21 to 60 years old. They all believed the rumors about Dominic Dane, no matter how impossible they sounded. Berserkers were monsters, twice the size of an average man, with claws and sharp teeth and a thirst for blood like no other. Of course he didn't kill one by himself. It was common sense. And Kelpies were terrifying. When they infested any kind of water, they reproduced really quickly because they believed in strength in numbers, and it took a lot of planning and brute strength to actually capture and kill them. And boggarts? Well, yeah, maybe that one was true. They had no strength to speak of, and they weren't that smart. But everything else was bullshit, and every time I'd try to tell my friends so, they'd waved me off like I was talking nonsense. So now, I didn't bother. I just stayed out of their conversations about him altogether. Yeah, but not about that stuff, Eva said with a grin. Come on, he's so hot he kills my brain cells. I literally can't even talk to him. Patricia snorted, like he's ever going to talk to you. Eva flipped her the bird. Honest to God, I want to hate his guts, I really do. But he's just so dreamy, Hunter said, looking up at the high ceiling with a goofy smile on his face. I slapped my hand on my forehead. My friends were idiots. Why in the world did I have to claim a desk near them? He's a self-absorbed prick who will pretend he doesn't know you when you go say hi the day after you practically force him to smile and makes a fool out of you in front of all your colleagues. I said that in my head, but not out loud, thankfully. I've talked to myself since I was a little girl, so it had been a hard habit to kick. Still, I'd worked on it hard since arriving in Manhattan and working in the same place with 50 other people who can hear you perfectly if you, say, talk to the computer, or your journal, or ask the freaking clock to move faster. The reminder made me flinch. They put all kinds of names on me. Crazy, bipolar, schizophrenic, delusional. But I learned my lesson fairly quickly. Now I only talk to myself when I was all alone in my apartment. The rest of the day, my thoughts remained locked inside my head. Anyway, did you hear about Lark? Patricia continued in that hushed voice again. He was spotted at a vamp party last night. She gave us all a knowing smile. No way, Eva whispered. Lark? Really? I don't think he'd have the balls, to be honest, Hunter said with a nod, like he was actually impressed that someone would be so stupid as to attend a vamp party. We all knew what happened in those. You got bitten, and the fang venom of vampires gave you the highest high there is. And then you went back a second night, and a third, and a fourth, until there was no more blood left in you to drink. I keep telling you guys, we should try it, Eva said. Come on, you chicken shits, let's go get bitten. Her eyes sparkled as the mischievous smile spread on her face. Let's do it tonight. Patricia and Hunter were actually considering it. You guys, do I need to remind you what happens when you run out of blood? They all blinked at me. You die. Patricia and Hunter both shuddered and shook their heads. Stop talking out your ass, Eva. I am not getting bitten by those people, no matter what, Hunter said, rubbing the sides of his neck. Thank God. I hate you, Eva spit, and kicked the leg of my desk with all her strength, which wasn't much. She, like Patricia, was a witch, and enhanced physical strength was not in their list of abilities. Though they weren't fey, they had an affinity to magic that most humans didn't possess. Some were stronger than others, and they cast their spells through sigils.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?